Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is the number one New York Times bestselling author, Elizabeth George, and she is out with a brand new Lindley novel. This is called Something to Hide. It is now available everywhere, and this is now the 21st time that we can visit New Scotland Yard and or at least drop in on Inspector Lindley and his crew there. And Elizabeth, I love this book because it took me out of really the traditional London and into this Nigerian community, and to there's an investigation about a murder of an officer there. Can you kind of set this up for us? Because I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to do that. The book involves a particular family within the Nigerian community, a rather dominant, well, an extremely dominant husband, a submissive wife, a teenage son who's just on the brink of manhood, and a daughter who is 10 years younger than the son. And the father is very intent upon making a good marriage for both of his kids, a traditional marriage to build family. And he is on a collision course with his, not only with his son, but with his wife, because of what his idea of tradition is. So what the book does is it takes a serious look at a social issue that is not peculiar to London alone. Indeed, it is a worldwide social issue, and has a lot to do with men's domination over women. And so, in a large sense, the book is actually about women who are owning their power, who are coming back to who they were meant to be. And that's reflected in not only in that particular nuclear family in the book, but in all of the female characters.
When you write a novel with a particular theme behind it, like that, about the women and women's roles and how they're treated by men, does that permeate your mind throughout the entire writing process? And how do you avoid getting bogged down in the details of the story while keeping in mind the theme of where you need it to go?
One of the things that I've learned about theme is to allow it to emerge rather than to decide, okay, I'm going to write about this particular thing, about women owning their own power. I don't usually consider that. I consider what the issue is, what the crime is first, and then as I write, I begin to see the theme emerge. Additionally, what I'm able to tell is, within the subplots, if a subplot, I have said like this, if a subplot goes clunk, it's because it's not part of the unity of theme. So we always talk about books having unity of time, place, theme, action, and so I've learned to recognize that a theme is an important part of the book, but I don't let it dominate my thoughts. Indeed, most of the time I don't think about it at all because I have a sort of a feeling as I'm writing if what I'm writing is in line with everything else that I've put down before. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's always interesting to me that there's an American author writing about a British detective story, and you've got these themes that go into when we read an American detective novel. Policing is very politicized here. Does that happen in the UK with policing? Is there that certain politicization from both sides of the issues there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Indeed, there's a huge controversy in England about policing. When I was there in September, sort of in between the Delta variant and the Omicron variant. And what was going on was that the commander, who is a woman, actually a female commander, well, her contract was up for renewal. There was a huge controversy about whether to renew her contract or not, and a lot of it was coming from, the rank and file policemen. And it really didn't have anything to do, I don't think, with the fact that she was a woman, but there was political issues involved. So it's very, very political there too. And that's one of the things I like to give the flavor of is in this book, when the publicity, the media people become involved, the media arm of Scotland Yard, and how they have to juggle what they reveal and what the papers are going to say about them. So it's very much a political organization as much as it is a social organization.
This is a longer novel than a lot of the detective thrillers that we see that are set in the United States. And so I would think that timeline is very important in how you manage it and make sure that the reader comes along with you and that timeline matches the reader's ability to keep up with the pace. And how do you keep that in mind as you write?
That's a great question, because what killed me so much, it was so difficult in this book, was exactly that. It's what I call "What did they know and when did they know it?" To harken back to Watergate, and really what it was is that because this novel gives a lot of background information as the setup, my detectives don't come into play until about 100 pages in, and so the thing about writing a crime novel is that you have to put the reader sort of behind the wave of the plot or on top of the wave, but you can't let the reader get ahead of the wave being the plot, because that way, if you do, the reader knows things in advance that the detectives are just finding out, and the story just sinks under its own weight. And so what happened with this book is it actually took me 5 drafts to get the chronology right, because I get to a certain point and I realize, wait a minute, oh no, the reader is going to know this already, so I had to start again and juggle the timeline to make it all fit. So basically, I'm looking all along at the chronology of the book, and I am making sure as best I can that who the characters are is really clear to the readers, so that they're not going back and thinking, who was this person? That happens to me a lot when I'm reading a book, and I'll think, wait a minute, why don't I know who this character is? And then I have to go back and find out. So there are various devices that I employ to make sure the reader, knows not only whose story we're following at that given time, but exactly who these people are.
I'm chatting with Elizabeth George, the number one New York Times bestselling author. Her brand new Lindley novel is Something to Hide. It is available everywhere. You know, Elizabeth, you brought that up about how that happens to you when you read novels, and it happens to me, too, that you have to go back and remember who a character is. And all these books go through several editing processes, and is there something different, maybe, when you talk to other writers about your editing process, that doesn't happen? Because it seems like that would be something that could be cleaned up in editing, or is it sometimes the nature of the book doesn't allow for that?
Well, you would think it could be cleared up in editing, but sometimes I'll read a book and I'll think, did anybody edit this book? Because it would be so unclear who the characters are or who did what to whom when or what the timeline is, and I'll find myself going back and trying to figure it all out. But I think really a lot of it. It's really in the hands of the writer, because I have to say that definitely when it comes to copy editing, and the copy editor is really the person who should be catching this stuff. The editor usually is, the editor is looking at characterization and plot and setting and things like that, but it's the copy editor who's supposed to be keeping all of this straight and making sure the writer has kept it all straight. And, honestly, copy editing isn't what it once was. I do have to say that, and I say that as a former English teacher who taught grammar, and there's appalling lapses in people's knowledge of grammar, and it shows up often in these manuscripts.
I'm intrigued by where you write, and I know you wrote this one in an area of Seattle known as Capitol Hill, and that area, when I looked it up, sounds a lot more exciting than the Capitol Hill we all know and are familiar with in Washington, D.C. Can you explain to me that area? Because I think it's very intriguing.
Well, yeah. Capitol Hill is east of, sort of like a little bit northeast of downtown Seattle, and it is indeed a series of hills. Seattle is, like many, many big cities, is really, really constitutes a bunch of neighborhoods, and Capitol Hill is one of the neighborhoods. It is it's the center of the LGBT community, and it is part of the city that was down and out for quite some time. It was actually down when I first bought my first condo there in 2002, but I had a feeling that it was going to come roaring back to life, which indeed it did. So it's a really active and it's a really vibrant community, but it has all of the same kinds of problems that, you know, any inner city community does. And so, you know, right now we're experiencing a tremendous amount of homelessness that is, you know, that's evident not only on Capitol Hill, but also in various other areas of Seattle as well. But it is the, you know, it's the center of a lot of art and a lot of theater and just a lot of activity. It has bookstores, it has restaurants, it has bars. It's really very, very cool part of town.
One of the characters that I just love, every time I read one of your books, is Havers, the detective sergeant, and she's got this personality, and it almost reminds me of the John Mortimer character Rumpole, just the kind of attitude about her. And when you write her, is that a way to explore that side of your personality and to translate that into the book? Because she's about as far from boring as you can imagine.
Yeah, you know, she's a lot of fun to write, I have to say, and she has an irreverence to her that's pretty similar to the kind of irreverence that I have for, you know, noble institutions. And it's not so much that that she scorns them, it's that she's able to find the humor in them, and then the humor manifests in you know, in various amusing ways. So of all the characters, I would say that she probably best reflects my attitudes, not my dress sense, but definitely my attitudes. She certainly is more freewheeling with her comments than I am. I'm much more circumspect, but you know, she serves the purpose of levity in the book. Otherwise, I think the books would be terribly grim, and everybody would be taking themselves terribly seriously. And then it would all kind of, you know, sort of disintegrate into a very grim reading experience. But because she's there and because she has this very quirky relationship with Lily, I think that it adds something to the book that is welcome to the reader, and certainly is welcome to me when I'm writing the books. I always get a big kick out of you know, out of her scenes with Lily and out of her first appearances, you know, in a book each time I write one.
Well, this book was just a fantastic ride for the 21st edition of this Lindley saga. This book is called Something to Hide. It's by the number one New York Times bestselling author, Elizabeth George. It's available everywhere. Pick it up, order it, download it, however you read. Elizabeth, just a fantastic book here. I loved it, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.